How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I am great. How was your birthday?
Oh, it was great. We didn't do anything, which is pretty much what happens once I got married.
Well, when you were married, you probably still did stuff, but
no,
with kids,
no.
Then you don't do anything.
Oh, no, okay. I mean, okay. You're talking to the girl, honestly. My wedding anniversary was the beginning of this month, and it wasn't until I logged into Facebook that I had a shared memory of one of our past anniversaries that I actually remembered it was the anniversary. Aww. So we're not really big on celebrating. For the kids, we do. But like for my husband and I, we don't really
celebrate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there just comes a time where it just reminds you how old you are.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, like you need a reminder, right? And then all day long, people wish you happy birthday. As if you can't get that out of your head still.
I know, but that's nice. That's sweet. I got a lot of people wished me happy birthday, and thank you for that. It was nice. But yeah, other than that. But yeah, I'm excited because our favorite holiday.
It's our spooky time of the year, and the weather is hit. It's right on point right now. The leaves are falling. It's chilly outside. It's kind of gloomy. It's the bestest ever.
It's bestest. So wonderful. It's love it. This is Halloween. Are you dressing up this year?
No. I haven't dressed up because I'm sad because I liked Halloween more than the kids because I loved getting dressed up, as you know, because I just love that. And I haven't done that for, I don't know, 2 years now because my kids are too big to do anything.
Yeah. We're just going to throw candy out to the COVID trick-or-treaters.
I didn't even think about that. We need to make like some sort of chute that like shoots it down to the end of the
driveway. I saw that somebody actually took tubing and decorated it in piping. Orange and PVC piping.
That's
and
a good idea, actually.
Put orange and black stripes going down it, swirled it down, and then they just put the candy down the PVC and let the kids get it that way. Yeah.
I like that.
Kind of nice.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Maybe I'll do that. I won't, but I like that idea.
Yeah. Do you have something spooky for us?
Well, let me tell you, Jen. Okay, this is spooky. I'll give you that, but it's not really Halloween related. So let me just start out by saying when I was researching or trying to find a case to do for Halloween, you know, I was looking up the Halloween, true crime, whatever, and I stumbled upon this. And I'm making this be our Halloween episode, but I do have to give you a fair warning. I want to start out by saying this episode is very graphic. I even cut out some details. And there are a few mentions of animal torture, abuse, and death. And it's pretty graphic. So if you don't want to listen, that's cool. No harm, no foul. And we'll see you next week. That's not an issue. This is tough. This was a little brutal. Let's just put it that way.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty bad. And usually I kind of stay away from these things because I just, especially now in COVID time, we have enough, you know, whatever. So, Jen, let's just say, you know, Halloween, we love Halloween. We do. You and I and kids. You and I and every kid in America or wherever loves Halloween. You know, we like to be that ghost and ghouls and getting scared and things that go bump in the night. But today's case is actually about, I mean, I guess it's a real life monster so much that he has been nicknamed the Werewolf Butcher.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you cut out some of the bad details.
Well, I left some in so that you could get it, but I left some out because it was terrible.
That was okay. Bad.
So here we go. So it's April 13th, 1995, when the daughter of 48-year-old Rita Huffman was trying to reach her mom, and she wasn't answering the phone. Now, that's not unusual, but it kept going on for an extended amount of time. So she reached out to her sister, who is 15-year-old Amanda, and was trying to get her. Well,
right.
We all know about teenagers and phones, and mm-hmm. if you're trying to call a little 15-year-old, chances are they're going to answer the phone, right? Because they yeah. love that phone time or checking in and being social.
For they the never have it out of their face. I mean, they're exactly. always on the phone.
So with neither of them answering, the girl, the daughter, felt something was not right. So she headed over to the house. This is terrible. I can't even imagine. She headed over to the house to check on her mom and sister. When she arrived, the front door was locked. So she went into the backyard and entered through the sliding glass door, which they always left unlocked. Once she entered the house, she would find a vicious, brutal crime scene. She ran out screaming into the neighbor's house to call 911. Officers arrived to the residence, where they located the first body on the couch in the living room. Blood was everywhere, as if it had actually been smeared on the walls, the couch cushions, all of that. It was apparent that she had suffered a torturous death and had been mutilated. It was determined during her autopsy, Rita had been stabbed 31 times. Her breast had been cut off. Her genitals Sorry. Had been, here it gets, I'm telling you, her genitals had been cut off and shoved into her mouth. Her body had a slice from her genital area all the way up to her chest, revealing her insides. Due to the amount of cuts and their locations, they believe that she would have passed out and or lost so much blood that she would have passed out, and it was pretty quick. Her body had been posed in a graphic manner for the police to find when they would discover her. Her legs were spread far apart.
What a horrible, horrible way to go.
As officers made their way through the house, they locate a second body, which would turn out to be Amanda. Amanda had been hit in the head with a softball bat and then stabbed. The hit to her head was swift and hard. She was then raped while she was dying.
Aww.
After the rape was finished, the same softball bat was inserted inside her. Her genitals had been sliced off, and they were placed on her face. Her mother's breast had been placed next to her body. Amanda had a watch on her arm that had quit working at 11:35 p.m. This led authorities to believe that this was when the attack occurred. Investigators figured that she was the one the killer was truly after, that the mom just happened to be there. Is this gross or what?
This
now you know that crime scene, the photos.
I mean, like, honestly, it's to leave the bodies like that is mm-hmm. just more insult to injury. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Just mm-hmm. desecrating mm-hmm. somebody's oh, body is just,
oh, yeah.
I don't even want to think about it.
When detectives checked the log throughout the night before, because, you know, it's the next day when they discover them, obviously, they learned that a car was, in fact, pulled over, and they were looking for a possible suspect in a nearby burglary. It was around 2 a.m. that morning that they had arrested a man, and police searched the area, and incidentally, they locate a bloody knife, and the blood was a match to one of the Huffmans. There was a man who stepped forward saying he saw a truck in the area around 11:30 and the truck was acting weird. Police officers checked the logs and they see that a person had been arrested, not affiliated with this crime, right? He had been arrested for a possible burglary. However, upon doing so, they searched the area and they do find a bloody knife and that happens to match the Huffmans. But that's from the area. That's not necessarily connected to this fella yet. Because police didn't really have anything on him other than maybe he saw something with the Huffman murders or possibly maybe he did commit the murder of the Huffmans, they had to let him go. But they would be watching him nonstop. They had looked into his background and they knew his background included attempted rape, as well as rape, along with burglary. They also knew his name. The man was Jack Owen Spillman III, and sadly, he did much more that night than just burglarize a home.
With a name like that, you would kind of expect him to either be some kind of wealthy
Ivy
Leaguer.
It's not his real name.
It's oh, it's not? Name. It's well, not?
Stay tuned. The first name's different. We'll see. As police had Jack under surveillance, and they were tailing him, they were watching him nonstop, he tossed something out of a window. Now, if you know police are watching you, why are you doing that? Oh, that's right, because you are a bloody killer. That's why. It turned out the item that he threw out the window was a ski mask, and the ski mask had blood on it. In particular, Jen, it had blood near the mouth hole of the mask. The blood turned out to belong to Amanda, and the blood had gotten on the mouth hole of the mask because Jack drank her blood.
What?
He drank her blood. That's how he got blood on the mask that he wore when he went in there.
Lord have mercy.
I'm telling you, this is something else.
That's wrong on so many levels.
That is all they need, and police make their move to arrest Jack Spillman. Now, while he's under arrest, authorities move in, and they search his home. And there they locate evidence, such as hair, blood, and fibers, all related to the Huffmans. Police also learn that Spillman was working, you ready, as a butcher at the time of the crime, which explained why the cuts on the victims had been so clean and deliberate.
Well, either a butcher or a doctor, but yeah, that makes sense.
Jack Owen Spillman was born August 30th, 1969. He's our age. Now, his birth name was actually Roy, but one of the men that his mother married adopted him and changed it to Jack. So his real name was actually Roy, but he was adopted by one of the many men that his mother married throughout his young life. His mother had a series of marriages, and so was a very bit of an unstable life for him. He was the only boy in his family with four sisters. Jack was said to be a quiet boy, and usually he would just hang out by himself and play. But, you know, with four sisters, who can blame him? Yeah, I don't think you'd necessarily think that's odd, that he was just kind of a loner and hung out by himself. Another thing his sister said, which is bothersome, but I'm not sure what it means exactly. They said that he would rock, like he would just rock. Like he'd, when he was watching TV, he was like, almost like in a trance and he'd rock himself. You know what I mean? Like his body would rock. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the family grew up on a farm and with lots of animals. And well, Jen, we know where this is going. Just like I mentioned before, there are always signs. Jack would kill rabbits by choking them. And when his sister would tell on him, his mother would not really make a big deal out of it. You know, guess it's the old boys will be boys. But the sister knew, the older sister, she knew that, like, that's not normal for a little boy to do that. And he would often do it and then bring the dead animals to his sister, who, of course, is mortified. This is you just caught a rabbit and you choked it and killed it. And then you're bringing it to me as if it's a prize, you know? As he grew older, the odd behavior continued. Here we go. Like I said, there's always signs. Police arrived at their house one day because a neighbor had called them because Jack had apparently exposed himself to her. Now, he's a little boy. We're talking young. Talking like middle.
Exposed his body part?
Yes. Flashed him. Jack, of course, denied it, saying he was inside his house and he was simply changing his clothes and forgot to shut the curtains. Mm. And, you know, that's their fault that they looked in there. Now, he was a pretty young kid at this time. OK, but this would be the first of many times. He didn't get in trouble from his parents as, you know, of course, it's just a misunderstanding. But soon another misunderstanding would happen again and then again and again.
One time is a misunderstanding.
Right.
The rest are problematic.
He continued to expose himself to strangers, neighbors, and he also started making obscene phone calls at the time. Now, this is the time when everybody, you know, this is early, I would say, 80s-ish, probably. Mm-hmm. So everybody had a house phone still.
Landline. Mm-hmm.
There was no mistaking his behavior when the school called home to tell them that Jack had exposed himself to girls at school. Yeah, that's no misunderstanding, let me tell you. Not going to happen, right? Jack dropped out of school in the ninth grade. So he's got a ninth grade education, basically, at this point. Now, Jack was also enjoying his time as a petty thief and burglar. He had taken to breaking in and stealing things, but was caught in December of 1987. He was convicted of 8 counts of second-degree burglary, 4 counts of second-degree theft, 2 counts of vehicle prowl, and second-degree theft. At this point, he's 17 years old. He pled guilty to second-degree theft and second-degree burglary. He was sentenced to 25 months in prison. He served 21 months and was released in September 1989. At age 20, Jack was becoming very familiar with life on the inside. In 1989, as I stated, he was released. He was participating in a work training program while he was in prison, hoping that he'd be employable upon release. Now, while there was a counselor inside that made some notes on Jack, stating that he was about at the fourth grade education level. He was, you know, reading and writing at about a fourth grade level. He had little to no job skills or support when he joined in this work training prison program. So he was really hoping that he could pick up some skills on the inside that would transfer to the outside. However, the counselor also added, based on his behavior at work release and his 1985 conviction for indecent liberties, I believe he is a sexual deviant. The counselor added, it is my opinion that he will be a threat to the community upon release. Now, this is where I have to say, I don't know why people don't listen. I mean, how many times do you have to be told something to where it becomes apparent? Look what all he's done all by the age of 19.
Right.
Right. Right. Just their signs. Like I say, it's crazy. In April 1990, Jack was sentenced to prison for 33 months for second degree burglary. However, in October of 91, Jack makes a break for it, but he doesn't get too far. He's caught and arrested again for second degree escape and was sentenced to an additional 17 months. Finally, after spending 26 months in the pokey, Jack was released from prison in February 1993. Now, at this point, they don't even know what to do with Jack. His family, they don't even know what to do with him. But guess what? It's about to get way worse. One day, he's out now. One day, Jack arrives at his sister's house and he tells her he's got to leave town. Well, Jack, why do you have to leave town? Because a woman had accused him of assault. But of course, it wasn't him, Jen. They have the wrong person. It was his friend. It was Jack's friend. Jack claimed that he and his friend went to a bar where they met a woman. So they both kind of picked up the woman. Mm-hmm. The guys, the men, offered her a ride home. And it was there that Jack said he kissed her. He just simply kissed her. He kissed her while his friend raped her. So in October of 1993, Jack was sentenced to 365 days in jail with 241 days suspended. What? On that Spokane rape case. And he had pled fourth degree assault. Now, his family, they were hoping that this did the trick, right? Mm-hmm, sure it did. They were hoping that when he got out of jail, he would come out better than he went in. Like he hasn't the other times. They could not have been more wrong. When Jack was released from jail, he went to live with his sister. His sister noticed that he had a new fascination while he was staying with her. Or I guess we could even say obsession. Wolves. He liked wolves. He had wolf posters on the wall, wolf figurines all around. You know, this might be a bit odd for a young man in his early to mid-20s to collect wolf items. But, you know, it's not that strange, and it's definitely not illegal, right?
No. But I'm thinking he likes wolves, but he's drinking blood like a vampire, but okay.
So this collection would prove telling later on. Shall we say? It didn't take long for Jack to find trouble. In January of 1995, police get a call that a man exposed himself to a woman inside the Wenatchee Public Library. Now, when officers arrived to the library, of course, the man is already gone. The woman would later report that the man was, in fact, Jack Spillman, after she saw his face in the newspaper. This is just a litany of his crimes, is what we're
going through. Yeah, no, I'm flabbergasted. That's all I can say.
The next month, it's now February 9th, 1995, when a young man started knocking on the front door of this woman's house. The knocking then moved to the back of the house. So the woman was like, what is that? What's going on? you know, thinking maybe somebody needed help or something. Like, what is banging on my house? So the woman walked outside to see what was going on. A man jumped out at her and attacked her. The victim was able to fight him off and kick him in the groin. You go, girl. Before he finally stopped. He was trying to rape her. He was trying to attack and rape her right then and there. He ripped off part of her clothing as he made an escape. But, and this is going to give you goosebumps. Chillingly, he told her he would return, but he used her name when saying it. So he knew her. He knew her. It seems Jack was living 3 blocks away and was never charged with this crime, but was suspected as being the man responsible for this attack. Authorities also believe that Jack had been watching her and stalking her because he knew her name and they had never met. In another peculiar incident, and this is disturbing, reports were coming in that there was a peeping Tom in the neighborhood. One of the houses that reported it was a home with 2 young girls, and the 2 little girls had reported that a stranger was watching them get dressed through their window. The police come, they investigate it. I mean, we all know that being a peeping Tom could be the start off for something bigger, or maybe not, but it's still not okay. A few days later, the family arrives home to find their beloved family kitty murdered, mutilated on the living room floor. Authorities later find out Jack Spillman had been working in the neighborhood as a roofer during this time. Now, this is, I'm telling you, all these crimes as they found out later that he was right. responsible. Okay. Just to give you an idea, but this is the buildup, right? This is.
Right. So they didn't just see in the living room floor and then just like, oh, yeah, Jack's in the neighborhood. Years later or months later that found. Okay. Gotcha.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's like, why don't they get the bastard now?
No.
That's just why we're just go get him going and through them. Drowned him or something.
Yeah. Also in February, a woman came forward after Jack was arrested for the Huffman murders and said that one day when she was out doing yard work, a man approached her and was asking for some personal information. Like, can I get your name? Are you married? How much do you weigh? You know, just things that you ask somebody on the sidewalk, right?
Yeah. So everybody loves to answer those questions.
Right? So she was creeped out, but he left, and she didn't really think much of it, which I totally would, because, you know, I'm the biggest chicken ever. No. However, she started receiving obscene phone calls right after that. The phone calls persisted until Jack was arrested. After Jack was arrested, the police showed her a photo, and she did say, yes, that was him. Another woman came forward after Jack's arrest, claiming that Jack was stalking her when she was shopping in the local mall. He was following her around and harassing her. So it's March 31st. I'm going through the year here, right?
Okay.
So we started with the year, so hopefully you're keeping up. I'm doing the timeline of this in like real time as it's unfolding, I guess. On March 31st, police arrive at Jack's sister's house. Now, at this time, Jack is living with his sister. And also their niece, who is living with Jack's sister. Now, this little girl is about 12 or 13 years old at this time. Mm-hmm. Police arrive and they want to question the young girl in regards to an incident that was reported to the Douglas County Sheriff's deputies. Police had learned that the niece had a verbal altercation with a fellow student who used to be a friend. You know how that goes, right?
Oh, uh-huh.
Just after the altercation... Right. So that night after school, someone broke into the young girl's home through a rear window when no one was home. Once inside, the perpetrator killed and mutilated the pet hamster belonging to the little girl. Blood had been splattered and smeared all around the room on purpose. A knife covered in the hamster's blood had been stabbed into the stuffed panda bear's head and placed on the little girl's bed. Blood had been sprayed around the room as if the hamster had been spun in a circle. And as a matter of fact, we later learned that's exactly what he did, so that it would go everywhere. Now, the young niece is distraught over the accident, and she swore she had nothing to do with it. I mean, little girls, that's why I was kind of giggling, because we know 12 and 13-year-old little girls, they get mad at their best friends and then hate them, and then the next day they're best friends again. You're like, you can't even keep up with it, right?
Oh, you know. Yeah. I know it all too well.
So no one would be arrested at the time for the hamster slaying. However, later, while in prison, Jack did confess to that crime, and he apparently overheard how upset his niece was as she was talking to his sister, and he just decided that, you know what, I'm going to take care of that. I'm going to take care of that for you, because he did really like his niece. I mean, he loved his niece, I guess, but so he just thought he'd just, you know, take care of that and go over and scare him. I mean, could you imagine? How horrific for a little girl. That's terrible. I mean, this is all terrible, but could you, hamster, you come home and your baby hamster's been brutally murdered?
It would be just mentally.
I got you, scarring. I got you.
I'm so upset I can't even think of the right words.
It's true. In April 1994, a young woman who was working at a strip mall in Kent, Washington, calls police to inform them that she had just been raped. She tells them that while she was working in the store, a man forced her into the back room and raped her, all while holding a gun to her head. The rape went unsolved until Jack Spillman was arrested. She picked him out of a photo lineup. Turns out Jack was visiting a relative or a friend in Kent at that time, so he could be placed in that area from where he is. I mean, this all takes place in the state of Washington, but Kent is a way different location than where he was living, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that timeline of events and crimes brings us up to the Huffman murders. Why did Jack Spillman target this mom and young teenage daughter? Well, it turns out he had been watching, stalking, and waiting for the right time. So there is a newspaper article, and I got a lot of this information from here, including what I'm about to tell you. And it's a newspaper called the Wenatchee World. Wenatchee World. There we go. Wenatchee World.
Wenatchee.
Yeah, and it has an article on it, and this comes from there. At the time of the murders, Bob Keppel was working for the Attorney General's office as a private investigator, and he interviewed Jack Spillman. And these are Jack Spillman's words. What he says happened is that Jack saw Amanda and Rita together, and he followed them home that very day. But he wasn't quite sure when he first became aware of the Huffmans. But he had their home under surveillance for at least a couple months before he murdered them.
It is so creepy.
It's believed that here's some of the ways that authorities think that this happened. Amanda played softball, and later her coach came forward saying that after the murders, she recalled seeing a truck matching the description of Jack Spillman's parked near the ball fields several times during practices. Authorities think that Spillman may have noticed Amanda there while watching the little niece play ball, the one that I talked to about before with the hamster, right?
Mm-hmm.
So authorities also learned that Rita had a run-in with Spillman at a local bar on April 10th. Apparently, Rita was hanging out with some girlfriends, and when she got up to use the phone, she was on her way back to her seat, and this man kind of grabbed her, and they had a small conversation. This is what her friends would later recall. It wasn't anything that upset her. She went back down and finished out the night with her friends. However, bar patrons later identified Spillman as the man at the bar and that he immediately got up and left after that little interaction with Rita, which is telling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
After talking to neighbors in the Huffman crime scene area, a truck matching Spillman's was seen driving through and hanging out. No one at the time thought it was weird. No one even contacted police. But you know how those things kind of pop up into people's heads after something tragic happens. Like, oh, yeah, I do recall that there was a truck that was hanging out here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And such is the case. There was a young teenager that came forward and said on the very night of the murder at around 11:30, and that's, remember, they believe because this Amanda's watch stopped working right at that time, that that's about the time that the attack would have happened. There was a young teen boy that was taking his girlfriend home in the neighborhood. He recalled seeing a big Chevy truck, gray in color, parked about 250 feet from the rear of the Huffman's residence. He said the man in the truck was just watching the house, just staring, almost like in a trance. He thought it was weird that he took a good look at the guy, but he never reported it. You remember correctly, the back of the house was the sliding glass door, and they never locked it. By morning, the Huffmans would be slaughtered by Jack Roy Owen Spillman III. It is believed that Amanda was his main target and that he had been watching her and stalking her for months, and that the mom was just a secondary victim. just like we always talk about, Jen, ever the killer coward, like so many of them are, Spillman wanted to avoid the death penalty.
Of
so
course.
What does he do?
Plea deal?
He bargains.
Mm.
He's going to confirm what police had long suspected. Jack Spillman is also responsible for the death of 9-year-old Penny Davis. She's 9. And this is really tragic. And again, I did leave out parts of this because, I don't know, I was struggling with myself if I should put it in just because she's little. Mm-hmm. I mean, but here we go. On September 17th, 1994, 9-year-old Penny Davis disappeared from her home in Aeneas Valley. Now, this is a small town in Washington State. Penny's sibling said that they were playing outside when little Penny just walked away and never came back. Now, the story kind of varies a little bit here. Originally, it was said that Penny's sibling, her sister, told their mother that Penny had went off with her boyfriend. But she later changed her story to simply say Penny wandered off. Now, Penny's mother raced to the police to report her missing, but they did not have a house phone. They were pretty down on their luck. Penny was just trying to do the best she can, raising her young daughters. They didn't have a house phone. They didn't have electricity. So the police station was 16 miles away. At first, the sheriff's deputies assumed that the little girl was lost and that they spent hours searching the area. Later, as time passed, it started to become clear something much more sinister probably happened to the little girl. Disturbingly, the police were so close to the perpetrator, but they didn't even realize it. When officers first pulled up to the scene, they saw a man driving along Patterson Creek Road, which is the same road that the Davis home was located on. Authorities learned that the man, Jack, was living with his girlfriend in his girlfriend's mom's house, which was a neighbor of Penny's mom's house, or Penny, as a matter of fact. Police pull him over, and the man gives him his name, Jack Spillman, and that he was actually out there helping search for Penny. He had heard that Penny had went missing. Well, they didn't hold Spillman at that time. They went ahead and let him go. However, after the fact, a little bit later, they go look him up, and they realize his criminal history. As in rape and all of that stuff. They go and talk to him at 1 a.m. in the morning. Now, I know most people, especially you, Jen, would not be too happy about being woke up by the police, but his behavior can be quite telling. The officers made sure to make a note of how odd it was that he was so calm after being woke up at 1 a.m. in the morning to talk to police about a missing girl. Now, I think I speak for most people when I would say that you would be upset. I mean, you're already upset that the little girl's missing, but upset that they wake you up, right?
Or at least, yeah.
Your behavior. Yes.
You'd be panicked thinking that you were getting busted.
Something. Right?
You'd have some kind of emotion, correct?
And they made sure to note he was very calm. Police looked around the area and they saw nothing suspicious. And Jack, of course, denied having anything to do with Penny's disappearance. They also learned that Jack had lived off and on with Penny's mom the previous year. Just as a roommate, he needed a place to stay after he got out of jail. So with no evidence, they had to walk away, but investigators never erased Jack as a possible suspect, and they believed that Jack was involved in the disappearance of little Penny. Spillman had no alibi for the time of Penny's disappearance. He had told deputies that he had been at a party at a nearby home. And, you know, he had driven a short distance to his girlfriend's mother's house because he was tired and he needed to take a nap. And that was about 5 p.m. Okay. So, of course, police are going to go check on his little story, his little alibi. When officers talked to the people that were at the party, they learned that Jack was, in fact, at the party. Sure was. But you know what? He took off for a long time. He didn't really say where he's going. He left around 5, and he didn't return to the party till about 10:30.
Oh, that's a long time.
And strangely enough, when he returned, he was covered in dirt.
Dirt?
Dirt. It was about 2 weeks later that Jack decided he needed to move back in with his mother. Okay, so he was out of there, right? And I'm assuming this was because he knew police were, you know, they were tailing him, they were watching him, and I think he felt the pressure. Another little note that I put in here, police in town knew that he was not a nice guy, and East Wenatchee Police Officer Chet Vierning, he was a detective at the time with the police department, and he said, "He and I were on a first-name basis when I was a detective. If I spotted his truck, even when I was off duty, I'd park down the road and I'd walk up to him and say, 'If you're not shopping, you better get the hell out of here right now.' He was up to no good. If he was sitting in his truck somewhere, I knew he was just watching women."
Oh. And he can't do anything about it.
Nope.
Damn it.
Then, interesting little tidbit here. Jack Spillman would later tell investigators at the Washington State Corrections Center that he called women birds. He said, "You observe birds, and that's what I do with women. I observe them." Sadly, in late March of the following year, a hiker stumbled upon what looked like a human jawbone. The police arrive on scene, and it doesn't take too much digging around until a small body is unearthed. It would take until July for the DNA test to come in and confirm that the body was that of little Penny Davis. Her body was so decomposed that they could not determine the cause of death, but what they could tell was that this was not her original burial spot.
So how did they know?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Jen. The insects that were found on her body were not native to that spot that she had been found in. So they knew right off that she had initially been buried and killed somewhere else and then moved to that location in which she was found. Her original location has never been located, and Jack Spillman has never divulged it. And they've asked. Investigators believe she was buried in her original spot. This is really tough to hear and say. Here we go. Investigators believe she was buried in her original spot for over 2 weeks. And how they know this, I'm going to tell you, but in my heart dropped seriously when I read this, as I just stated. So her jawbone was discovered away from her body, and apparently it takes about 2 weeks for a jawbone to be able to break away.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to Google all this because I was like, say what?
The tendons, I guess?
Yeah, for it all to be able to fall away, I guess would be a better way to say that. And if anybody knows, can clarify that and explain it to me, that would be great. Because I was like, I spent...
Well, the tendons would like deteriorate after a while.
Yeah,
right?
I would assume that. And I'll explain this in a bit. But talk about your browsing history. I was looking this up at work, right?
Oh, good.
Because I was like, wait, what?
Well, it's a good thing that you teach that true crime class.
I know. I get away with that. That's how I did. But, you know, that's just still disturbing. So her jawbone was discovered away from her body, and apparently it takes about 2 weeks for a jawbone to be able to break away. Now, I looked all this up, too. I Googled it at work, which because I did not understand that. Police believe her jawbone fell off of her as he was carrying her from his car to rebury her in McLaughlin Canyon, which is where she was located.
Well, to be quite honest, I was afraid that you were going to tell me he did something we're not else done with
yet.
Her body.
Okay. Oh, he did. We're not done yet.
Because
This is what they know from, this is before.
Autopsy?
This is what, because they discovered her body, right? But they didn't know Jack. They don't have Jack yet. They don't have Jack yet. He hasn't. He
so you're saying they don't have Jack, the person, and they don't have Jack. Nothing.
Yep. Now, Jack wants to tell police exactly what happened so he can avoid the death penalty. Jack tells them that, just like he'd always done, he began watching the little girl. But guess what? It wasn't Penny he was interested in, not originally. It was actually her 10-year-old sister. He had been watching her, stalking her, just like a snake waiting for the right time to attack. That time came, but when the 10-year-old little girl was not outside, Penny was. He took Penny instead. Jack told officers, quote, "One day, time was right, but the wrong person."
Opportunity.
Remember, Penny knew Jack, as he had lived on and off with them when he needed a place to stay, so it would not be weird for Penny to go off somewhere with Jack.
I'm sure he would be trusting, or she trusted him. Yeah.
And this
Mom
goes
probably
back,
did too.
And this goes back to the sister saying she went off with her boyfriend. And, you know, Jack was in his mid-20s. Penny's a little girl. She could have, you know, kind of thought that it was her boyfriend or the sister did. Remember earlier the sister said that and then she recanted and said, no, she just wandered off. But Jack goes on to say that when he came to the house, he saw Penny and took her instead. He hoisted the little girl on his shoulders and took her to the car. The two of them drove around for a while, for a long time, actually, until Jack found the location, which would be where Penny would die. Jack said that the little girl knew what was going to happen and started crying, asking him why he was doing this, and that she also knew what he was about to do, but wanted to know why. He grabbed her by the throat and told her to shut up. He began torturing Penny the moment they arrived as he tied her up to a tree and proceeded to cut into her body, causing excruciating pain, but not death. Penny would be tortured and raped for over 2 hours before he slit her throat. Before that little angel died, Jack would tell the police in an interview that Penny said this to him. I don't know why you're doing this, but I forgive you. Right? I'm about to cry. That's
heartbreaking.
So he acknowledged that that shocked him. And I listened to the tape. He did. He was like, I that really shocked me. You know, I just, it really shocked me. But you know
but
what?
Not enough to stop.
Not enough to quit doing what he was doing
and kill himself. Fucker. Sorry.
He later told a cellmate that Penny died more quickly than he had intended. He wanted to torture her and he wanted it to go on and on. He then drank her blood. Now Jack, and to this day, has never told police where that original spot was. And I don't know. I don't know why, unless he just wants that to be a private thing to him. Mm-hmm. He will never give up where
it's his fantasy. Yeah.
Here we go. It's going to get really bad here. It does. I'm going to talk broad terms here. I told you this was, I think this could be the worst one I've ever done. It's either this or little baby Amora. But you know what Jackoff did tell the investigators, Jen? He told them at first that he put little Penny alongside the riverbank and placed her just inside the water line. So it was just a shallow bit of water. After sleeping on it that night.
No.
Not with her, but like after going home and sleeping on it. You know where I'm going. He returned the next day and dug a shallow grave using only his bare hands. And he would then return to her, dig her up, and perform sex acts with her. He would do this several times, and by several times, I mean over 20 times. He even mutilated her body long after death. And when he was finally finished, he posed her so that when she was discovered, she would be splayed out for the most shock value. And this is the same pose in which he left Amanda Huffman as well. He's mentally ill, obviously. I mean, there's more to this than just, he's definitely mentally sick.
Well, what a horrible way, desecrating the body. I mean, not desecrating it necessarily, but putting it in such a obscene way.
A little
kind
girl.
Of smears.
Well, both of them are little girls. The other one was only 15.
I know, but it just like smears the memory of them in an obscene. I mean, their legs are splayed open and it's very, I don't want to say perverted. And it's.
Oh, I know.
Their dignity's gone. No more dignity.
How did Jack end up with the Davis family? It turns out that he met the Davis family through a friend and Penny's mom said he seemed like a really nice guy and he needed a place to stay, so she agreed to let him stay there. And in exchange for just doing some things, some chores and yard work and things around the house. Now, Jack did tell her, the mother, that he had been in jail. And well, I guess he should have, you know, maybe given her a little bit more information on his jail capades, because if she would have known why he was in jail, I'm sure she would not let him stay in the house with her, her 9-year-old, and her 10-year-old daughters.
Oh, yeah. That's a definite, yeah.
Prior cellmate, who was roomies with Jack in July of 1993, said that Jack was always reading books about crime. He read about police, forensics, and about serial killers, even telling his cellie that he wanted to be the world's greatest serial killer. So what's up with the werewolf fascination and the wolf fascination or obsession? Werewolf, or werewolves, as most of us know, is a person who turns into a wolf at night and devours animals, people, corpses, but then returns to human form by day. Thank you, Britannica, which used to be Encyclopedia Britannica, but I think they go by just Britannica now. That was my citing for that, okay? Some of these werewolves are super sexy, like Alcide from True Blood, while others inherited this unfortunate condition after being bit or attacked from another werewolf. Another type you might not be familiar with, Jen, is one called lycanthropy.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with that.
Oh, you are? Okay. It's mm-hmm. a psychiatric condition in which a person believes he is a wolf. The condition is generally thought to be, you know, an unusual expression from a different disorder, such as schizophrenia, bipolar, or severe depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jack related to the wolf as the wolf hunts and stalks its prey and then would devour it. The difference being that the wolf does this for survival, and Jack did it because he enjoyed it. Jack said in the TV show called Evil Lives Here, which I love, go watch it, in regards to the wolf thing. I guess it's like the thing inside me. It's like a wolf that's feeling the hunger. He eats, gorges himself. I feel like something savage just wants me to tear open a human being. Those are from his words. Jack Owen Spillman III, also known as Washington DOC inmate number 938784, yes, I looked that up because I had to know about this guy, is serving his sentence at Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla. Jack is now 51 years old and is serving life in prison without the possibility of parole for the murders of Penny Davis, Amanda Huffman, and her mother, Rita Huffman. Thank goodness he's locked up and will be for life.
Yeah, never. I hope he's getting the psychiatric treatment he needs.
I'd hate to be his roommate. That'd be
his cellmate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. No. Mm-hmm. Wonder if they mm-hmm. room him by himself. They should.
Like in solitary or something?
Or just by himself. He can't be with anybody. It's terrible.
No, I wouldn't trust him. I wouldn't sleep with him in the room. Or some bigger inmate that would overpower him easily, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just...
Mm-mm. Yeah, but if you're sleeping, you're asleep, you know?
What a bastard. Speaking of werewolves, did you ever watch the TV show Destination Unknown with Josh Gates?
Maybe, TV show? I don't know.
He goes to foreign countries and or goes anywhere and he looks up just different mysteries, or he did a thing on werewolves and the backgrounds for werewolves and stuff. It's a great show and I love him. I just think he's the cutest thing ever. But somebody goes, oh yeah, there's a guy that turns into a werewolf and, you know, you need to come see him. So they arrange this meeting with the guy and he's like, oh yeah, I can turn into a werewolf for you. And so it's like Josh is watching him and this guy starts going, and just like straining like a bodybuilder. And he's like, and then he'd stop and he'd go, no, wait, 1 minute. It's coming. And he'd start, no, sorry, I can't do it now. You'll just have to come back. And it is the funniest thing ever.
And he never did it, right?
He never, no. It was just,
you can't just change into a werewolf on command, right? No. Like I said, you gotta be bitten by one or, you know, it has to, you know.
No, but I need to find that. It's on the Discovery Channel. Expedition Unknown. Yeah.
Okay. But good. I watched the Chicago 7, the new mm-hmm. Netflix thing. That was pretty good. It was interesting. I woke up at 4:50 this morning because I had a nightmare that Shelley and I were being chased by a serial killer in the gymnasium, and I was sweating and breathing heavy because I was running away from the serial killer, who looked remarkably like Jason from Friday the 13th, by the way.
Oh, good.
But I was running bleachers and steps, and in my dream, I'm like, holy shit, I think I'm just going to let him get me. Then I woke up and I started laughing, and I was like, well, you know I wouldn't be running. Let's be
honest.
Time
to get on the treadmill. Yeah. Woo.
I mean, my ear was sweating, I swear to God. But anyway.
What'd you think about The Haunting of Bly House?
I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of slow and you got to pay attention. And mm-hmm. like I said, I'm having a very hard time concentrating on things.
Yeah.
So
I liked it at first. And then the more I got into it, the more I wasn't really loving it. I need to go back to rewatch it because remember in the first, The Haunting of Hill House,
mm-hmm.
everything in the background was like kind of ghosty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you could kind of see, you could make out an image that could have been a ghost or things like that.
Right.
And I was really disappointed because I kept this Bly Manor. I was kept looking and I couldn't find anything. Well, now go back. They actually have, and the spoiler alert, people, if you haven't seen it, you might want to watch. But all the ghosts that are in the house of the Bly Manor, they have are somewhere in certain scenes. Like they're just quickly. There's one that's the plague doctor is in the corner.
Oh.
And I never mentioned that. I was like so disappointed because The Haunting of Hill House had like all those ghosty things in the background, and I loved it because that gave it that extra creepy factor to it.
Shoot. And I'm going to have to watch it.
I know. And so I'm going to have to watch it again now too, so I can pick out all the creepy ghosts that are in the house that are just lurking somewhere on screen that you don't, like they did stills of them. And they'll be like, and you wouldn't know it unless you actually were looking for
them. Look that up.
And this is, you have to actually find the ghosts that are in the house somewhere, like in the kitchen.
You really would have to watch it twice.
Yeah.
You know, watch it once for the story and then once for the thing.
Just for the ghost, because there's, you know, one of the ghosts is behind a little kitchen cupboard and just, yeah. And I'm like, that just makes the creep factor go up exponentially.
I agree. Plus it's creative. I like that.
But yeah, I was disappointed in it. But now that I read all this, I have to go back and check it out. I've been reading this book for my next episode. And you know how quickly I read. Last week I was reading 5 to 6 hours a day and I still haven't gotten through this book.
Because it's a big book?
It's not necessarily, it's on my Kindle. It's not that. It's just the guy goes and like, he's like, okay, let's say character A. He goes and he spends like 3 or 4 chapters going all the way back into character A's family tree.
Is it important to the story?
Kind of, because it deals with wealthy Southern. Mm-hmm. Let's just say one of their neighbors was Maya Angelou.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they have a great lineage.
I got you.
And it kind of, it's boring. I'm going to be honest with you. It's boring.
Well,
but other than that, I've been watching happy stuff my little VPN. I've been watching Gogglebox, which if those not familiar, it's just normal everyday people watching TV and you watch them as they watch. It sounds really boring, but it's really fascinating. And I think Cam and I would be absolutely darling at it.
Oh, we really would be. And hey, I wonder if
we should do something like that.
Somebody's going to the UK.
We are.
Right?
We are going to the UK.
We should go lobby to do that. I'm serious.
Okay.
I'm serious.
Well, they normally have like your set family or set people that do it every week.
But we could be like their
guest. They're
like
famous over there. They're like,
we could be like their guest.
But I'm telling you, we would be darling at it. And there's two young girls in there that, God love them. They're not the sharpest knives in the drawer.
Those are the one. I watched that one. Like you sent me that clip.
With the little, Dez?
Yeah, the two little
watching
girls.
Dez. And they're like, Doctor Who's a serial killer now? Yeah. But
why,
the
yes,
ones,
he is.
And I would like to think that those cute little young girls would be us. But we're actually, now we're going to see Mary and our best friend Marina. That's how they always announced them. And Mary and Marina are about in their 70s or 80s, and they've been best friends forever.
They're just
the cutest. Yeah. And they get kind of raunchy, and it's really kind of fun because they're like, oh, have you ever had a French lover? No, have you? Oh, I think a French lover would be fun. I mean, it's so sweet.
That's
and
hilarious.
It's so innocent, and it's just one of those nice TV shows to watch and just wash away the troubles of the world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just
get your mind off of it.
Yeah. It's not murder like dealing mayhem with any crappy Kardashian or that kind of drama. It's just this nice, wholesome, fun TV show. You know? Mm-hmm. I like it.
Totally.
It makes me laugh.
Totes.
So anyway, that's my ad for Gogglebox. So, and they do it in Australia and Ireland too.
Oh.
Australia one's kind of fun. And it's kind of fun because if you watch the Gogglebox, they're all having tea while watching TV. And then you watch the Gogglebox or the Gogglebox in Europe. They're all drinking tea and watching the TV or the telly. And then the Australian ones, they're all drinking beer or wine.
Oh, that's hilarious. Just,
it is. It's fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just different stuff.
Different drinks for different folks.
Yeah. Kind of fun. Anyway. All right.
Jennifer, do we have any promos this week?
We do have a promo.
We did.
It's our friend Leroy Luna from Excuse Me, That's Illegal.
Leroy Luna, I love him.
I know. Awesome. Oh, it's a great podcast. Well, I love him.
That made me happy.
He's funny. He makes me laugh.
I should get that happy with everybody. Okay, let's take that back. I'm sorry. Every promo before that, every promo after this, I'm just as happy. Trust me.
Well, just
I am happy for the others. I was just shocked. I didn't know you were going to say that. So yeah. That's all.
Yeah, okay.
I love all of our true crime friends. We have to support each other as we can, you know.
Exactly.
Right? And every time you give a promo, well, we do, but really it's you, then I go check them out. So that's cool, too. And I found some that I like that way. That
well, good.
I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't. Yeah. Because I'm a creature of habit, and I usually find something and stick with it, and then slowly integrate new people into it.
Good for you. Yeah.
Thanks.
Good for you.
51 going on 82. You're welcome.
Well, we better let you go. It's 3 o'clock. It's time for your dinner.
It is, actually. You want to hear something funny, and then I'll let mm-hmm. you go. Yesterday, it was about this time we were over at my mom's, and my kids were going over to their friend's house. And so it was about this time, and we were at my mom's house, right? And mm-hmm. my mom says, well, do you want to go drop them off at their friend's and come back, and we can go shopping? And Tess, my daughter, goes, Grandma Billy, look what time it is. Mom's almost in bed. Like, it's true.
It is.
I shut down after 4. All right.
Born
that's
to
it,
be
Jen.
Wild with a bedtime at 5.
That's right, buddy.
P.M. Yep.
I can't make it up.
I saw some party balloons that said, you can only stay till 9 a.m. or happy birthday, you can only stay till 9 p.m. Yeah.
Oh, totally true. I'd be like, what?
Something like that. Yeah. That. Or you have to leave at 9 p.m.
I just wake up in the morning. Like, I stayed up till 9:30 last night, and I was like, I'm going to stay up late. So I stayed up till 9:30. I woke up at 4:50. That's the thing. So that's why I panic and go to bed early, because I feel good when I get 8 hours sleep, at least 7.
I used to be okay. I used to go to bed fairly early, but now with this whole COVID thing, I've been with not being able to go anywhere. I'm usually up till like 12:30 or 1 before I'm like, God, I'm getting tired. I should probably go to bed. And then I sleep till 8. So,
all right, Jen,
that works.
I'll shut up now. And then remember, Jen, mm-hmm. remember. Lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
And when Jack was little, he was said to be a quiet boy who played by himself often, but you know, with 4 sisters, that was worded very badly, wasn't it? Played by himself often.
I'm sorry, that's okay. My 12-year-old boy came out.
I got you.
Anyway, Nico, so how you doing? Been watching Gogglebox, still love it. I'm very upset about, I don't even know how far, I think I'm in 4 episodes into Great British Bake Off. I was very disappointed about the last one.
I had water nearby and I forgot to bring it in here.
Oh, there you go. I was talking to Nico about the Great British Bake Off. The GBBO.
What?
The latest GBBO, Great British Bake Off.
Oh, yeah.
I was very disappointed by the outcome of the last episode I saw, episode 4.
Oh, you're talking to Nico.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, he doesn't desert me like you do.
Won't that be sad the day? I mean, won't that be cool the day that Nico will be like, he'll respond back to that.
I know.
That would be scary.
I'd love it. He'd probably hate it, though. Could you imagine?
Mm. He's going to get Cam and Jen in 3D pretty soon, about 9 months from now.
I know. I'm so excited.
Just wait. A-E-N-E-A-S. Aeneas?
Hold on. What is it again?
A-E-N-E-A-S. N-E-A-S. I could ask my sister. It's in Washington State, but Aeneas? Aeneas? Aeneas?
He's brought to you by PronounceNames.com.
They still need to sponsor us.
Aeneas.
Aeneas?
Aeneas.
Okay.
Aeneas.
Mm-hmm. Aeneas. OTCP is brought to you by PronounceName.com.
It's so true. It really should be. Said that. Sorry.
You going to make it?
No. You know what I need is potato chips. Potato chips cure everything. And the salt just like cuts the grime in your throat.
If we're going to London, you need
fish
crisps.
And chips.
It's crisps.
Oh, I know. No, you get fish and chips over there. I get fish and chips. Oh, it's so good. Oh, my God. So good. Malt vinegar. Oh, my God. It's my favorite. Okay, here we go.
We got chips from the World Global Market yesterday, and the Marmite chips, the Walkers, which is like Lay's. So good. So good. And then we also got something called Monster Munch in pickled onion flavor. Mm. Holy cow. They are yummy.
Yeah, good to know. Yeah. Save me one.
Okay. Or we'll just go. And here we go. Hunt down everything there.
Now, at first, the sheriff's deputies assumed the little girl was lost because it was kind of a rural area, right? You go outside and you play.
It was a what area?
Rural. Rural. Right?
Rural. Rural. Okay. On a private street?
PronounceNames.com. Okay. Now I'm not going to say that.
So when the police come, I need this is... verbal proof that you did it just for the podcast and not
I did
because
actually.
You've got somebody buried in the backyard.
And, and if anybody has more insight to that, I'd like to know.
Which
about
you know
it.
What? I haven't seen your husband for a while.
Yeah. Huh. Police leave.
No police. Sorry.
Cut that out, Nico.
Police. Or put it at the end of the bloopers. I don't care.
No.
Oh, hey there. You like true crime stories, right? Yeah, I know. Who doesn't? But I gotta admit, after a while, all those stories of murder and heartache, well, they tend to go straight to my hips. So that's why I, Leroy Luna, have created a podcast called Excuse Me, That's Illegal, where we'll take a hardcore look at some softcore crimes. No TED Talks on Bundy here. The letters BTK won't be coming from these lips. Unless he had a brother that used to steal library books. Suppose I'd be willing to go balls deep into that one if that were the case. Anyways, you'll hear stories such as the Mad Pooper, a female jogger who wreaked havoc in a Colorado Springs neighborhood, using one family's front yard as her own personal dumping grounds. If this kind of content sounds like it's up your alley, Excuse Me, That's Illegal, is available right now on all your favorite podcatchers. So come join me.
I'll be right here waiting for you.